How high's the water, mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. But we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, because that's the only thing we got left that'll float. It's already over all the wheat and oats, 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rising. Well, the hives are gone, I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past their knees, 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 4 feet high and rising. Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 5 feet high and rising. Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. We can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising.
Well, it's Wotan's day, Dave Lane's favorite day. And here we go. It is the September the 28th, 2016, and this month is almost over. You better get your jack-o'-lanterns ready, your pumpkins hollowed out, because we're headed towards Halloween, when the spooks, and I don't mean the niggers, the other kind of spooks will be roaming around the countryside. You might wonder why I played that song by Johnny Cash, which incidentally is one of my favorites, and I sing it every once in a while when I go out karaokeing. But the fact is that I've been disturbed for a long time about the right wing in this country, especially right wing racists. And I'm all happy as hell that they're racist. But on so many other issues, they're flat ass wrong. And a lot of that comes from the clinging on to religion. Yeah. Gets all mixed up. And then anybody that comes along and says, I'm a racist, and then they want to talk about the weather, they come up with some cockamamie idea or almost anything else, and they try to tie it to a Christian outlook and so forth, the right wing. I'm not that way. I look for truth wherever it's at. I don't like the idea of right and left. We should all be one working for the race. I don't believe in Republican or Democrat. We should all be one working for a common goal, even if it's just the well-being of the massive amounts of people in the country, especially white people. So you'll find I don't have as many followers as a lot of people, because the right-wing racial types try to keep it oversimplified, and anybody that comes up with a sort of racial position, but a lot of crazy ass ideas on the internet they go along with. One of those things is global warming. I studied both sides very carefully, and I don't believe the right wing side has an argument when it comes to the scientific outlook on the problem. And so there I leave the company of the right-wing conservatives who may be racist, but they're wrong on so many other things. And so I pick up a lot of good things that are truth from the left. Of course, not their position on race. But I tend to be like the National Socialists were in Germany, where they had tremendous science. They didn't let religion get in the way of tremendous science and their outlooks on race. And so that's the part that I think is the best for the white race, is to promote extreme science. To me, I believe science is a religion, and it needs to be a religion, the same way as the best interest of the race, because it makes biological sense. But it's easy to go along with this right-wing conservative nonsense because they hear it from all over the place. And obviously, to be a good racist, you have to be against everything that the left say. And that is nonsense. That's nonsense. So today I'm going to play you a little bit about the weather and the weather change. And I studied it one way and studied it the other way, and I've come to the conclusion that it's the weather change is right, and those who deny it are wrong. I don't care whether they call themselves a Ku Klux Klanner or conservative guy or what. So here goes.
Very small changes can have big effects. Give us an idea of that. So, a 1 degree change in temperature, what is that likely to bring over sort of a long time?
So we talk about the Earth on average has warmed 1.7 degrees since 1880.
1.7 since 1880. All right. Okay.
So
doesn't sound like a lot.
It doesn't sound like a lot. And CO2, like probably in the year you were born, I don't want to give anything away here.
1975, I think.
Okay, well, yeah, something like that. So probably 320 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere. So I looked on the way over here, and the global mean right now is 404. All right. That's actually a huge change in a short amount of time. The last time that we had CO2 concentrations as high as we see today on the planet was over a million years ago. And we've seen a change from 320 to over 400 in your lifespan, in just part of your lifespan.
Even so, the pretend lifespan.
Yeah. And so associated with that is this incremental change in Earth's temperature. We've crept up 1.7 degrees, and we'll probably add that much more in this century. So we're probably on track to a change of around 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit across sort of the human record from the late 1800s on up to the end of this century.
Okay, so that's about 200 years.
Yeah.
And we increase, on average, three and a half degrees.
Yeah.
So what's the impact of even the next 1.7, okay,
right.
Specifically, right?
Yeah,
what,
sure.
What kind of
all right. Well, you know, scientists, you know, it's this and it's that, but remember, we're talking about mean temperatures.
Right.
So some places on the planet will experience much more warming, contributing to that mean, and other places less.
Sure.
So a change of, a lot of people looked at the essentially the extinction or the loss of Viking society in Greenland. Right, Vikings settled in a very sort of warm period during Greenland's history, and there was a slight change in cooling. So warming and cooling affect people.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vikings settled Greenland in what they thought was a favorable period. They had agriculture, they grew their society, but they disappeared in a period when there was about 1.5 degree cooling. So that was enough to change the growth of plants, when plants bloomed, the productivity of their pastures, and that they didn't have a society that could adapt to that kind of temperature. So even changes that are 1, 2, 3 degrees Fahrenheit put tremendous stress on biological systems, and then we depend on those systems. So we see increased large rain events. That's one of the big things we're seeing now, these huge drenching downpours. There was an article in the papers today coming out of an important science study that suggested that that global warming significantly contributed to the massive rains that we saw in Louisiana just a few weeks ago.
What would be the mechanism? Like, how would that?
It's a redistribution of the energy in the atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
So really what we see as weather is all about the Earth trying to move heat around from places where you get a lot of heat or places you have less heat that creates a gradient. And we see weather is winds and ocean currents, and it's all redistributing this energy. The more heat we have on the planet from warming, on average, that's the more energy we have to drive weather. So we get extremes. We get extremely big things like rain events, but we also get extreme droughts. Those are both part of the same thing. So it's important to recognize that
even though they're happening in different places,
yeah. for different reasons. but they're all connected to a change in the atmosphere, because we all share one atmosphere, right? And it's all about trying to redistribute that warming energy across the planet's surface.
So does the same argument apply to extreme heat and extreme cold?
It does as well.
Because that's the interesting argument that a lot of people who are skeptical of climate change. It was a really cold winter, so therefore, how could you think things are changing that? But this
part of that. Not only is the planet getting warmer, but weather is getting more variable. So the highs are higher and the lows are lower. And people that are interested in extreme events, they're rare events and they're extreme events, so it's hard to study them. But we have enough of a record now to realize that warming is affecting the frequency of these kinds of events and the magnitudes. And so, as I say, the drenching rains in Louisiana, the prolonged drought on the West Coast is associated with a change in ocean temperatures called the blob.
That's the name of it.
It's a big blob of warm water sitting off the west coast of the U.S.
It's a scientific term.
Yeah, and it's changing the track of rainstorms coming in. It's making the Sierra Nevadas drier, less snow, less runoff, less water in all the reservoirs in California. So, but it's all connected to changes in ocean temperature and heating in that case.
If you're just joining us, this is Mike Mastanduno, and you're listening to The Briefing on Sirius XM Insight, Channel 121. And I'm speaking with Professor Ross Virginia about climate change and global warming and how we should understand the effects of it. So, Ross, you just returned from the Arctic. What are your observations? I mean, you've been going to polar regions for quite some time. And what kind of changes are you seeing actually right now?
Yeah, so I work both in the Arctic and the Antarctic, and I've been doing this for 25 years or so, and I see both poles, pole to pole, and there are changes, and the changes are dramatic, and just like anyone who lives in a place for a long period of time, you begin to develop a personal sense of how that environment works and how it's changing.
Yeah.
In the north, the Inuit who live in the north, they talk about this is local knowledge or traditional knowledge, okay? So sort of my local knowledge in these places is seeing changes in ice, changes in the size of snow fields, changes in the faces of ice sheets in places I've gone to and observed each year. I see it changes in the amount of water in streams, but I see the changes in when, for example, the plants are flowering. One of the major changes we're seeing with warming is that the phenology, the growth cycle of plants is changing, when they flower, when they produce seeds. And those little changes are also important because it changes when insects reproduce, it changes when pests develop. And, more energy and more heat in the Arctic leads to more mosquitoes, right? We all hate mosquitoes, but they're amazing critters. They're absolutely essential to Arctic ecosystems. But mosquitoes also harass caribou. They can actually cause mortality in young caribou. So more warming, more mosquitoes, this impacts animals, which are very important to subsistence societies in these regions. So all these things are connected in really interesting ways. But I think the most profound changes in the polar regions are changes in ice.
Yeah.
And we're seeing melting of the Greenland ice sheet. We're seeing changes in Antarctica. And whenever you have ice on land, and you either take that ice on land and dump it in the ocean, like icebergs dropping off the edge of the Greenland ice sheet, or melting on the ice sheet and flowing water into the ocean, then that water will result in sea level rise.
And so where would we actually, and how fast would we see that effect? And could you see that effect on the coast of the United States pretty directly?
Yeah, we are. We're seeing it. Again, this is a thing where a small annual change adds up over time. So sea level rise right now is about 3.5 millimeters per year.
Okay.
That's like a little, that's just a little bit. But you project that 3.5 millimeters out to the end of the century. We probably have at least a meter of sea level rise now coming. And if, in fact, the rate of ice being delivered from ice sheets to the ocean continues to accelerate, and we see that and we understand now why that's probably happening, that number could be as high as 3 meters. All right. So that's, that's 3 feet to 9 feet of new water in the ocean.
Yeah.
You couple that with high winds and storms. We just had Hermine off the coast. We talked about all that beach erosion going on. Add that much extra water and see how far that's going to push inland. So we're already seeing what they call sunny day flooding, places along the East Coast in North Carolina and Virginia, where even on nice days near high tides, water is appearing in places that historically it hasn't been. It's coming in through storm sewers and drains and appearing on the streets. So our cities were built, you know, 100 years ago and more. And so we didn't understand. There was no reason to think about sea level rise. Well, we always thought that the world was sort of stable and was provided to us, and that's what we planned for. So as we add more and more water, larger and larger storms, more winds, we can push that water inland. Dramatic effects on all of our port cities, all of our coastal cities, estuaries, and this is globally.
Yeah, it's just not in the United States.
No, it's like 13 of the 15 largest cities on the planet are connected to oceans or estuaries.
Right.
So, and most people on the planet are along the coastal margins, right, in many ways. So these are profound effects that are going to be connecting the whole world to changes happening in the Arctic and the Antarctic region.
So Russ, you're a scientist, but you're one with policy interests, and this has got to be one of the most frustrating problems. How do you think about the science-politics relationship here? What would it take, in your view, for people not just to recognize this problem, but to act on it with the kind of urgency that I know you believe is necessary, given your analysis of it?
Well, exactly. So anything that we do now will stave off a large amount of future damage because this is accelerating change, right? So the economics of this is invest now and the payoff comes later. And, of course, we're all loath to think about that. That's a difficult thing politically, as you well know.
Yeah.
I think the science is becoming more and more clear. The science is clear that we're in the middle of a very dramatic experiment and change on the planet. And people are already adapting. People live in the places that are changing the most, like in the Arctic. These are resilient, adaptive societies, and they're already living climate change.
Right.
And insurance companies know all about storm damage, and they know how to adjust the rates. They know what the projections say. City planners are already looking at the placement of buildings along coasts. I've seen designs where, like Boston is one of the cities that's going to have the most sea level rise, because of its position in relation to major ocean currents. And I've seen some really interesting future designs of Boston that you could do two things. You could build walls to keep the water out, or you could let the water in. I've seen one model where people say, well, maybe Boston should be more like Venice. The way to manage the water is let the water in, right? But there are people creatively thinking about these challenges, right?
Now, there's a paradox here, right? Because the more creative people are at adapting resilience, the less likely people are to see the urgency to say, hey, we got to fix this, right? So
I see that adaptive behavior at sort of dealing with the extremes of the problem.
Right? Yes.
We don't know if they're going to work, and we know they're going to be horrendously expensive, right, any of these types of solutions. So to avoid getting to the point where much of Boston is unlike anything we see today, what can we do? So The first thing is we can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which CO2 and methane to some extent. The UN conference in Paris produced the first true international binding agreement. The U.S. has ratified in China just the COP21 agreement. So that's huge. I'd love to have seen more teeth in that.
Right.
But nonetheless, it's the first time that everyone has come together and countries like the U.S. and China can agree that the atmosphere is not sustainable. We do not have a stable atmosphere. And we all depend on a stable atmosphere for our farming, for our economies, and even for our politics, right? People aren't happy if they don't understand and are stressed all the time by extreme events. So I think science, we always need to work harder to do better science, but we need to share science more completely. I this radio talk's a great opportunity to talk about the issue in that way. But I think also the more interdisciplinary work we can have, the better. So actually scientists and policymakers working together very in tight teams now, and along with the humanities. I mean, that interdisciplinarity is what we need to be creative and to think through the problem in a more effective way. The science is certain. These effects are profound and will continue to happen. There's a huge amount of inertia already built into the system. Even if we begin to pull back on greenhouse gas emissions, we've created effects that we're going to see decades from now. You know, it sounds a little corny, but as a professor, you look at the new crop of students coming in each year, and the students are just arriving here at Dartmouth. And, they want to be engaged. They want to know. They want to understand. And many more of them are activists than we used to see. They truly are. They probably show up in your office wanting to know about what we do at Dartmouth and why don't we do more. So I think that's the positive side of that angle. But it's tricky. It's really hard. And I think that this idea that investing now will make a difference for, if not them, their children and their grandchildren. And understanding just what that difference might be. What would the world be like if we don't take action?
Yes. Ross, this is great. That's all we have time for. Thank you so much for joining me. Ross Virginia is an ecosystem ecologist at Dartmouth. That's all we have for today.
Well, speaking of tragedies, let's get back to our pessimist guide to history. 1891, Swiss railroad bridge collapses, kills 120 people. A newly constructed bridge over the Birs River near Basel, Switzerland, collapsed when a train made up of two locomotives and 12 passenger cars moved out upon it. The two locomotives and three passenger cars dropped to the river below, killing or severely injuring all those aboard. The Swiss have long been known for exactitude of their engineering projects. 1891, Caribbean hurricane. A powerful hurricane battered the island of Martinique on August 18, and in just 4 hours killed about 700 people and caused over $10 million in damages. Don't tell me, Mother Nature, don't get pissed off. 1891, earthquake shakes up central Japan. See, Mother Nature gets pissed. On October 28th, one of the most powerful earthquakes shocked ever recorded hit a heavily populated central Japan, instantly shifting the ground by up to 40 feet along a 60-mile fault line. About 200,000 homes and 10,000 bridges were knocked down and 2,300 people were killed. 1892, Oil City, Pennsylvania catches fire. Heavy rains the previous month had already caused flooding in the Oil City when June the 4th a thunderstorm broke over the city. Suddenly there was a loud explosion and flaming oil, apparently loosed from a ruptured storage tank, began flowing on the rushing flood waters straight into the town of Oil City and nearby Titusville as well. Fire killed 130 people and destroyed both towns. Here's my favorite. 1892, Lizzie Borden axe murders. On the morning of August 4th in their home in Fall River, Massachusetts, Abby Borden was hacked to death with 19 blows from an axe, and her husband was likely killed by 11 blows to the head. Though daughter Lizzie was the prime suspect in the brutal murders, she was acquitted after one of the most sensational trials in U.S. history. She lived quietly in Fall River until her death in 1927. Lizzie's story spawned a lot of literature and one ballet and a lot of 20th century movies. 1893, hurricane kills 1,000 in the South. Mother Nature got pissed off at the South and for having the Civil War, that's probably why. An Atlantic hurricane with winds of 100 miles per hour, torrential rains and heavy seas roared into Georgia and South Carolina on August 28th, leaving the coastal areas of Savannah to Charleston in ruins. The storm raged from the afternoon to midnight, smashing houses, ripping up trees, destroying boats, and flooding coastal islands. The only places that weren't hit was bars where liquor was sold. No! But that's probably true. One witness described Charleston as looking as if it had passed through a great siege of shot and shell and a subsequent deluge. Ancient trees lay toppled, tangled with wreckage of houses. Paris Island, South Carolina, was swamped under 15 feet of water, and a tidal wave at Port Royal, South Carolina, wiped out the entire town. The storm killed an estimated 1,000 people. 1893, killer hurricane hits Gulf of Mexico. The second major hurricane to hit southern states this year struck the coasts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama on October 1st, packing 120-mile-an-hour winds, the storm destroying everything in its path. The Louisiana islands of Grand Island and Chenier were flooded by massive waves. Houses crumbled as winds tore off roofs and flood waves carried away the walls. Survivors swam from one standing house to another, but each building seemed to collapse as soon as they reached it. In New Orleans and Biloxi, Mississippi, winds slammed boats into the shore and knocked down factories and other structures. In Alabama, 1,500 downed trees covered one 15-mile section of the road, while in the city of Mobile, crowds waded through the water up to their armpits and rode in boats down main avenues. Amid all this destruction, an estimated 2,000 people were killed. So, Mother Nature goes on a rampage once in a while. I think Mother Nature may have been a Nazi. What do you think? Well, this is why I've never bought a new car, boys and girls. Queens, New York, a spike in car thefts is being blamed on a hidden key you don't know is in your car, but thieves do. Police are linking the uptick in auto thefts in Forest Hills to valet keys that are kept in the owner's manuals of many new cars. They are meant to be used by valet parking attendants. A lot of car owners don't realize they have that key in their owner's manual. Well, there you go, boys and girls. That's why you should never buy a new car. Yeah, buy an old car like I do. They don't have any keys in the manual. Well, I bet that old Netanyahu, president of Israel, is happy to see Peres go. Yeah, Shimon Peres. At 93, kicked the bucket. But he was not a real hawk. He did try to bring some peace between Israel and the Palestinians. So he wasn't a very much of a friend of the Israeli war hawks. Well, the Anti-Defecation League is upset because Pee-Pee the Frog, the cartoon character that has become a popular internet meme, created by artist Matt Fury in 2005 as a cute creature with the catchphrase, "Feels good, man," unquote, has since evolved into memes featuring racist, anti-Semitic, and other bigoted themes the Anti-Defecation League has reported. Wow. According to the ADL, although the Pee-Pee the Frog character did not originally have racist or anti-Semitic connotations, internet users appropriated the character and turned it into memes that placed the frog in a variety of circumstances, some of which proliferated in online venues such as 4chan, Shan, and Reddit, which have many users who promote racist themes and imagery, and so subset of memes. Pee-Pee's memes came into existence in recent years with the growth of the alt-right, color them Nazi, segment of the white supremacist movement, a segment that draws some of its support from some of the above-mentioned internet sites. The number of alt-right Pee-Pee themes has grown, a tendency exacerbated by the controversial and contentious 2016 presidential election. ADL reported, "My God, run for your lives! Run for your lives!" Though Pee-Pee memes have many defenders, not the least the characters created Matt Fury, who has called the alt-right appropriations of the meme merely a phase, the use of racist and bigoted versions of the PP memes seems to be increasing, not decreasing. The ADL advised all Jews to run for your lives. Run for your lives. The frog is back. The Nazi frog. Well, well, well. British researchers will spend the next 3 years analyzing data gathered from social media and crime records from the Los Angeles area in an effort to see if hate crimes can be prevented by monitoring social media. The Justice Department will fund the study with $600,000, and researchers will work with the RAND Corporation, a research and an analyst group based out of Santa Monica, according to the Los Angeles Times. I'm going to get to the bottom of this shit. In recent years, predictive policing has become increasingly important. Utilizing and advancements of analytics like data mining and machine learning methods, noted Pete Burnap of Cardiff University School of Computer Science and Informatics. But the research could result in a new era of predictive policing. Oh my God, jeez. That'd be wonderful. We can figure out a crime before it happens. Cardiff University professor Matthew Williams, who previously participated in a similar study in the United Kingdom, thinks the research will eventually help law enforcement to prevent crimes by dispersing resources to a particular area before the crime actually occurs. It'll be wonderful. There's going to be no more racism. We're going to get them, guys. Furthermore, the study will give insights to hate crimes that, for the reasons that aren't entirely understood, often go unreported. In fact, according to the Justice Department, approximately 293,800 non-fatal violent and property hate crimes occurred in 2012. But about 60% of those crimes went unreported. One theory suggests victims who are non-citizens remain silent out of fear of deportation. Well, that's good. That's hunky-dory. Yeah. Well, we know that official reports of hate crime from police probably underestimate how common hate crime really is. But we don't really know by how much or which types of hate crimes are most seriously underreported. We know they go on every day by the thousands, said Megan Cahill, senior researcher at the RAND Corporation. This is a corporate outfit that helps the ruling class rule. Using Twitter data from Los Angeles County as a test case, this research will help create better knowledge about hate crime, and we hope it will ultimately contribute to more hate crime prevention by police and other snooper agents alike. Wow. However, Brian Levin, wonder what that name represents, executive director of Cal State San Bernardino Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism, said that while the idea is great, it's not quite as cut and dry as one might think. Levine noted that many hate groups simply don't make their intentions known on social media. No, they just go out and do it. Some segments of the community shun social media, Levin said, adding, so examining social media as a predictor can be a bit like having one screwdriver, and sometimes it doesn't work. I think you got a point there, man. I think you got a point. Well, I see that racist San Diego PD shot another Negro. I guess he was a Negro. Overnight. Yeah. Well, I see 43% of handgun owners are women. Almost a quarter from the urban areas. Does that mean black women are beginning to carry a lot of guns because of their crazy husbands and boyfriends that go crazy? Well, I see El Chapo Guzman. Guzman's a notoriously Jewish name in Central and South America and Mexico. So maybe he's a Jew. Well, we'll see about that. A couple of comments on that particular article. And look how often simple disagreement is tarred as hate or phobia. Big Brother's wet dream. The next one is, it is certain that BLM, La Raza, and other pro-minority organizations will be exempt from the study. Well, good comment.
Who's your little friend?
This is Ben. He's an old Joe that lived around here for a long time. And I do mean a long damn time. Old Ben here took care of my daddy and my daddy's daddy till he up and keeled over one day. Old Ben took care of me. Growing up the son of a huge plantation owner in Mississippi puts a white man in contact with a whole lot of black faces. I spent my whole life here, right here in Candyland, surrounded by black faces. I seen them every day, day in, day out. I only had one question. Why don't they kill us? Now, right out there on that porch, three times a week for 50 years, old Ben here would shave my daddy with a straight razor. Now, if I was old Ben, I would have cut my daddy's goddamn throat, and it wouldn't have taken me no 50 years to do it neither. But he never did. Why not? See, the science of phrenology is crucial to understanding the separation of our two species. In the skull of the African here, the area associated with submissiveness is larger than any human or any other subhuman species on planet Earth. If you examine this piece of skull here, you'll notice three distinct dimples. Here, here, and here. Now, if I was holding the skull of an Isaac Newton or Galileo, these three dimples would be found in the area of the skull most associated with creativity. But this is the skull of old Ben. And in the skull of old Ben, unburdened by genius, these three dimples exist in the area of the skull most associated with civility. Now, bright boy, I will admit you are pretty clever. But if I took this hammer here and I bashed in your skull with it, you would have the same three dimples in the same place as old Ben.
Didn't say. Taking the Fifth Amendment, huh, boy? Smart move. Well, the defense attorney, get on with his summation. We don't have an eternity to wait.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the antebellum South, it is indeed a sorry day for the white race and the colored species as well. When a man of my stature must come all the way down from the civilized North just to defend
This Negro. Negro. What a wonderful word. Derived from the Latin negrorum, meaning to tote. Now, say it with me. Negro. How soon we forget what the Negro has done for you. Who picked your cotton? Who tied their hair up in neat little bandanas and sang softly as they wet-nursed your little miserable children? Who taught you the meaning of doodah? See how soon we forget. But I'm not going to let you forget. We paraded witness after witness before you, attesting to the fine character of this young man. This young man who gave his weekly check to his mother. Now, can you honestly believe that this young man would attack a hunk of steaming white trash like this?
No.
Your right answer is no. I'm not going to beg. I'm not going to plead. I have one last piece of evidence for you I want to bring to you right now. Because on the night of the alleged attack, my client was in jail. And you can't be in two places at once.
Now, members of the jury, I want you to look inside your rational minds right now, and I know for some of you that's going to be an impossible task. But I want you to look inside there and bring back a verdict of not guilty. If not, you have proved to me that Darwin was wrong. And I say to you, if you can't find this man not guilty, then let him hang.
No.
Let him hang.
I now call on the great Ed Garvey for the prosecution summation.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Oh, no! Oh, no, please! Please, don't hang, Buster! Please, I don't get my husband hang! He's a good boy! I swear he is!
Aaron Dicey, that ain't your son.
That is your son. No, that's your son. Well, I believe it's the heat that gets to him, you know, which is swelling in here. Must be 115 in the shade and not a piece of shade anyway. You know, a lot has been said about this case, but I want to talk to the shop. Now, shop, they said that this young man was not at the place where the rape took place, but that, how you doing?
Good, Mr. Brown.
They say that he was in your jail, is that true?
Yeah. Well, he'd been booked and incarcerated. But the attack was at night. You know how slippery they are.
Slippery is a key word, Your Honor. Slippery. I found the book about Houdini in his cell. It's obvious he learned a little trickery from reading that book and let himself out of jail and performed the rape and then let himself back in. Slippery. I have a sworn statement here concerning the defendant. Your Honor, this is a statement from Jeff T. Tubbs, which says, on the night of June 15th, he saw the defendant in Carson's Wells Field laying on an anthill nude. And the ants was taking little bites out of him and everything. He went over to help him, and he said, no, thank you, I'm having a good time, just pour honey on him.
Unspeakable.
Detestable, if you get my meaning, because we're running short of honey. That explains the honey shortage. And if that ain't enough, when you hear out of the mouth of this dear, sweet angel of mercy, this wonderful flower of life, this innocent macaw brought in life. When you get, excuse me, would you tell the court in your own words what happened to you on the night of the 23rd? And if this don't break your heart, Your Honor, nothing on God's earth will. Go ahead.
It was a beautiful evening. The moon was full. All the frogs was croaking on the lake.
Frogs were croaking on the lake.
The jazz man was in full bloom. You couldn't have picked a more perfect night for a quiet walk. There it was. I was out on the road, all alone, just me and Toto. We had just eaten porridge at the Peter's house. And we was walking down the road when I see a rabbit and a cheeshire cat jumped out of a tree. And then Uncle Doctor fell off a wall.
A rabbit? Cheshire Cat, Humpty Dumpty.
Your Honor, this man is obviously a master of disguise.
Your Honor, the only thing that's obvious is that this woman is ridiculous.
You see there, Your Honor, a man, a stranger from the north, comes and calls our Belle of the South ridiculous. Now I beg you to bring in a verdict of guilty. There's no other verdict but guilty. Guilty, guilty. That's five guilty.
I can't stand it anymore. I can't let an innocent man go to the gallows. I'm the man who did it. I was with her on the night of August 23rd. It was me.
Well, now I was with her too.
Long about here tonight.
It's true. What in the hell was you doing with her? Why, it's obviously a case of mass hypnosis. Why, the mere thought of him wanting this woman is transcribed to the whole community like a violence. Why, the next thing you know, I'll be saying I was with her along about 11:30. Why, if this is allowed to continue and this Negro is free, why, nothing will stop the pace of time. Why, the next thing you know, they'll be wanting appeals. That's right, fair trial and whatnot. That's right, then they'll be wanting to vote.
No!
And if that ain't enough, someday they'll be wanting to play baseball.
Oh, no!
Great. Now, what the jury said about its deliberation?
Your Honor, we're done reached the verdict.
Your Honor, that's ridiculous. I haven't even voted yet.
No need to. It's unanimous. We find the defendant not guilty. However, Your Honor, we find this carpet-bagging communist pinko Jew boy lawyer guilty of getting him off.
I went to Africa, man. I was real fun in Africa, being with black people who were different black people. You know, I asked the African man, I asked him, said, what tribe do I look like I came from? And he told me, Italian. Are you serious?
No, you look at that.
Thanks. In Africa, they call me colored. The Africans, you know, you're colored in Africa. You have to live over there. Wow. I don't know, just the world seems different. I watch preachers on TV begging for money every day. Every day. It wouldn't be bad if they begged one day. You know, you were given some once. Please send in your money for Jesus. Like they know Jesus. But Jesus would show up, he would scare the fuck out of them. You know, he would go and say, hey, come here. See? Now, what are you talking about for me?
I just was going to... I don't know.
I'm happy I came here tonight, I think.
Now, you may think that the Negro problem just started in the last couple of decades. Let's go back to federal hearings in New York City. In the New York Times of September 25th, 1959, was published the first page in the first column, the testimony of Kings County Judge Samuel S. Leibowitz, who appeared before a Senate subcommittee headed by U.S. Senator Thomas Hennings, investigating the juvenile delinquency problem, which is menacing the safety of the citizens of the city of New York and the state of New York. The hearing was held in the United States Courthouse in Foley Square. According to this report, Judge Leibowitz called on the Mayor Wagner and other officials yesterday to discourage migrants from all parts of the country and the Caribbean from coming here until the city had overcome crime-breeding slums. He made public figures that Puerto Ricans, with only 7% of the city's population, were involved in 22.3% of the city's juvenile delinquency cases. Puerto Ricans, the figures also indicated, were involved in 20.8% of the cases of older individuals awaiting trial in one institution. The figures were contained in a document he submitted while appearing before a Senate subcommittee on juvenile delinquency, which was holding hearings here. They indicated a similar pattern among Negroes, who are estimated to comprise 11% of the city's population. Negroes were reported to comprise 46.3% of the citywide cases of crime awaiting trial at the Brooklyn House of Detention. In the same newspaper, on September 26, 1959, was published another report from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, by the Associated Press, dated September 24. According to this report, although Negroes make up only about 4% of Milwaukee's population of 764,000, they commit 43% of the city's major crimes during the first 6 months of this year. The police department reported Thursday a listing of major crimes showing 682 were committed by Negroes, 916 by whites, and 50 by all others. Negroes were the offenders in two of the city's three 1959 murders, four of the eight manslaughters, and seven of 11 rapes. The disclosure made at a request of the newsmen came as city officials called for tightening of firearm purchases regulations. See, this started a long time ago, boys and girls. The demands were made in the wake of the fatal shooting of a 39-year-old white housewife, Mrs. Sylvia Fink, by a Negro on Monday. The above facts clearly show that this dangerous situation of racial friction and hatred exists all over the country. It is becoming worse and worse every day due to the relentless enforcement of the integration law on our people. Of course, the politicians whose office depends on the votes of the ignorant masses defend integration, attributing the cause of the present critical racial situation to fantastic theories, carefully avoiding to mention the real cause of it for fear of losing the political support of their voters. See, nothing changes with these politicians. Nothing changes. And of course, nothing changes with the minorities and the Negroes either. Opinions of Prominent Thinkers. There's another fine book, one of the most complete from every angle on the race question, by Stuart O. Landry of Louisiana, The Cult of Equality. With the permission of the author, we quote statements which are true as being based upon natural, social, psychological, immutable laws, which as such are beyond the reach of the ignorant, the fanatical, and the selfish man to have them changed with impunity. Quote, there are numerous proselytes to the philosophy of equality of the races, such as politicians and statesmen, sometimes sincere, who endeavor to placate and win favor of great masses of non-Caucasian people for promoting the idea of racial equality. In the United States, there are opportunists and demagogues who, in order to gain the support of non-white voters in pivotal cities and states, add their plea for the obliteration of all racial differences. This is primarily the heart of it is in the Democratic Party in the big cities. That's why they've controlled the big cities for 100 years. The vogue of the equalitarian cult is growing, and herein lies a great danger, for the idea that all men are equal and all races are equal is indeed false, and its adoption as a working philosophy will have a deterrent effect on the progress of the whole race, the white race. Not only is this philosophy fallacious, it is biologically wrong. Carried out to its logical conclusion, it will prevent the natural development and progress of the various races and will reduce them all to the same dead level. The purpose of those who advocate the recognition of racial equality is to lift up the lowly and to elevate what have always been known as inferior races to a position of equality with that of the Caucasian race. Insofar as it helps to raise the standard of living of backwards people, their motive is praiseworthy. But if in their effort to push up on the scale of civilization several races now at or near the bottom, they pull down the race that is high up on the scale. Those who preach the doctrine of racial equality are doing great harm to the cause of universal progress. The fair-skinned, blue-eyed, and golden-haired people will all disappear. Instead of a white skin, soft silken hair, finely chiseled nose, expressive mouth, and a brow like Hyperion's, our men of the future will be a blend of the physical characteristics of the races of today. In other words, the mulatto race. The typical Homo sapiens will then have dark skin, straight or coarse hair, flat nose, thick lips, and slanted eyes. The most glorious animal the world has even seen, with all its beauty of person and its superior mentality, will have passed away. What a prospect for the future. Well, we're well into it now, boys and girls, since this book was printed quite a long time ago. When it comes to man himself, it is perfectly obvious that every individual is different from everyone else. No two individuals in all the universe are exactly alike. Nature glorifies in variation and in differences. This is true even of structural details. For example, we take fingerprints as the surest means of identification because no two sets of fingerprints are alike. The philosophy of equality is not only unnatural, since nature knows no equality, but it is deadening. It is a fatal philosophy to those who aspire paradoxically under its spell. Many individuals of the races, which are considered inferior, might give up trying to overcome their inferiority if they say all are equal. Why try to prove it? A civilization in which all are equal would tend to penalize the individual and to hold him down to a level of mediocrity. In fact, this may be seen in our public school system today already. The bright boys and girls in a class are held back so that the mediocre children can keep up with them. Our educational system fits the child to its Procrustean bed and chops off the heads or the feet of those who are too long to fit into it. The theory of equality is a communistic theory. It reduces all to a dead level. From a racial standpoint, the practical effort of the general acceptance of this theory, when it's carried out to its logical conclusion, is the merging of all peoples and races of the world into one race. The following are the disadvantages which will arise therefrom. A. The elimination of the superior race which gives us our modern civilization. B. The culture of the more advanced race will deteriorate. C. The mixing of 1 billion and a quarter of ignorant, unprogressive, and poverty-stricken people, some of whom are still savage, and most of whom are in a primitive type, with 750 million educated, progressive people enjoying a high standard of living, would reduce the latter group to the low level of the majority and possibly wipe out altogether our Occidental civilization. Amalgamation of all the races of the world would undoubtedly reduce the intellectual and general intelligence of the human beings to a lower average, to dilute and bring down to a lower level the mental capabilities of a group of superior people would certainly be disadvantageous and harmful to the future progress of the human race. The white race is asked to dilute its strength, as it were, by swapping some of its white blood for the blood that runs in darker hued people. A superior breed is thus to be contaminated by interbreeding with inferior ones. No breeder of animals would weaken the strain of his superior stock by crossing them with inferiors. Blooded dogs would lose their points if crossed with curs. Racehorses would lose their speed if bred with ordinary workhorses. The descendants of Jersey milk cows would not give us much milk, nor would the quality be as good if the cows were bred to common stocks. Race crossing will destroy civilization. The Caucasian race is a blooded stock among the races of mankind. Why injure it by crossing it with the common stock? Such a procedure could only aid the inferior strain at the expense of the superior. The whole world would suffer if the Caucasian race, with initiative and inventiveness, with superb intelligence, with a high moral concept and idealistic philosophies, if the race which produced the superior men is to be weakened by the introduction into the hereditament of genes of an inferior stock. For the white race to submit to this process is to commit race suicide. Race prejudice is deep-seated in human nature. It is based on the principle of similia similibus, that is, like to like. This principle runs through all forms of social organization. Quote, people who like the same things like each other, unquote. Conversely, those even in the same social strata who do not have the same interests, the same tastes, or engage in the same activities do not fraternize and are often inimical to each other. What people differ greatly in their customs, habits, language, and culture, and prejudice and bias is even greater. And when we add to the racial differences such as color of skin, the prejudice can hardly ever be overcome. It is thus natural for human beings to have prejudice and to exhibit bias in their relations with each other. The prejudice against people of darker race is inborn. This racial prejudice is a protective instinct instituted by nature to preserve the superior qualities of the lighter colored races. The Caucasian or white race is the superior race. It is responsible for the civilization we have today. Throughout recorded history, it has developed or produced all civilizations which have reached a high level. Where groups of Caucasians have merged or interbred with inferior stocks, the whites have deteriorated. The physical and mental differences between Caucasians and Negroes are visible and factual, and they are so great that there is no doubt of the inferiority of the latter to the former. Caucasians should retain their superiority and not lose it by merging with inferior races. for such a fusion would weaken the race that has carried civilization to its greatest height, and interference with the progressive evolution of mankind towards even finer and higher civilization in the future. The Negro in the United States can stay here and develop along with whites a parallel civilization in which he can have every advantage. I do not believe in that. That is false. It won't work that way. You've got to have total, complete geographical separation, and not just a few blocks away. But the Negro must remain a minority group. He must endure what might be called enlightened caste bonds. That is to say, he may enjoy every economic, political, and educational opportunity and the right to pursue happiness, the only restraint being that he cannot be received as a social equal by the whites. Well, if you don't have total, absolute, and separation by continents, or at least nations, you'll never beat it. You'll just keep going down, 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 Mr. White Man. Now, I know that calls upon people out there to take some positions that are a little dangerous, bloody at times, and so forth. But there's nobody really seriously supporting racial separation except a few of us and a few blacks. So we're headed towards a final rendezvous with destiny. And that's going to end up being a violent race war carried on from generation to generation. And the longer we wait, and the longer it waits to happen, the worse it's going to be. It's going to be like one of these movies where it turns people into savages, and even in the modern society. So anyhow, that's it for now. 14:05, I'll be back tomorrow, which is Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. Incidentally, that's from a book titled The Race Problem, Segregation or Integration, The Cosmic Laws of Evolution, The Great Controversy of Our Time by Dr. John H. Manus. He was working for the Pythagorean Society at 152 West 42nd Street, New York City, New York 36, New York. I don't know whether that group is still around or not, but it appears to be an educational group that covered things. There's several books they have in their library here. Prolonging Youth, How to Stay Young, Enigma of Life, A Guide to Vigorous and Successful Life, Truth and Religion, The Truth About Smoking, The Dance, Its Origin, Psychology, and Philosophy and Application, The Art of Prophecy and Divination. Well, I wouldn't have much to do with that book, but it's an interesting group that put this book out.
There is the very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
How can I convince you when your ears refuse to hear?
turn your heart away from me each time when I draw near. Your eyes refuse to meet with mine, they glance away in fear, as if you should not look at your reflection in the mirror. How can I explain to you when you won't understand? You scoff me and you mock me and reject the truth at hand. You spread your vicious rumors all across this troubled land. You will for me and knowingly transgress from his command. Your mind has been made up by people you don't know. Thought machines control the scene so well it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain, knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Every time I think about the damage that's been done, the anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome. I want to tear the moon out of the sky and drop the sun. Why do I feel so all alone, like I'm the only one? Even though your eyes are open, they may never ever see. Your mind may never comprehend this simple subtlety. Your heart may never hunger for the truth that sets you free. Your soul may know the darkness of divine eternity. Like many thieves who plunder in the shadows of the night, they break inside and enter through the windows of your mind. How can I control this poisoning of the soul? These lies that blind your eyes, blinded by the lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Your mind has been made up for you by people you don't know, whose thought machine controls the scene so well it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain, knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies?